This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Then There Was You, written by Claire Contreras, performed by Eric Eves Garcia and Virginia Rose.
Chapter 1. Tessa. If you didn't know the Hawthorne boys, you probably weren't from around here. They were the center of attention even when attention wasn't warranted. Like right then when Rowan, the oldest Hawthorne, was taking his usual morning jog. It would have just been a shirtless guy jogging, but Rowan made the thermometer on the hotness spectrum spill mercury with his looks. I'd always found him attractive, but the women in town decided there had been a turning point in which he'd gone from a really good-looking kid to a hot-as-hell man. And so, every morning, like clockwork, while I was lifting the last of the rolls of fabric into my truck and the moms were loading their minivans, for just a few short minutes, they stopped to watch Rowan. It had only been 2 weeks since I'd been back in town, and I'd already stopped looking. But I could tell exactly the pattern in which the sweat dripped down his back and chest. I didn't even need to close my eyes to recount where the tiny birthmarks were on his broad shoulders. And I didn't need to delve that far into the past to tell you the way his blue eyes hazed and his Adam's apple bobbed when he was turned on. I didn't have to imagine any of it like some of those women did when they were with their own husbands. I'd had him once. I hopped into the truck, slid the key into the ignition, and held my breath, praying that it would start. Last summer, when I'd been home for a month, I hadn't thought this thing would be around much longer. So I was both surprised and disappointed when I'd come back for this short visit and found that it was still running. Sort of. It wasn't that I hated the truck, because I didn't. It was that the thought of the truck finally giving up the good fight acted as scissors to one of the last ties I had to this place. Again, it wasn't that I didn't love it here. It was that every time I visited, I felt like this place would threaten to suck me into a sinkhole and I'd be stuck for good. I wasn't even sure why I felt that way. My brother Freddie left, my sister Celia left. Even my parents went their separate ways, though they'd both come back to visit separately on occasion. Dad to check on the house, Mom to check on my grandmother. I was the last one left to pick up whatever things I wanted to put in storage, and I'd spent the last week working on that. It was down to clearing a few things out and listing the house, which we'd all agreed I'd do before I left unless I had to leave before I got a chance to. In that case, Grandma Joan would do it, but Dad really didn't want that. I knew that regardless of how badly I wanted to leave and never look back, I'd miss these streets, and the lake, and the memories. The truck made another sound, as if it was just about to start, but didn't. I pounded on the dash for good measure. I'd turned down my grandmother's offer of driving the candy apple red Corvette sitting in her driveway, a gift she bought herself a few years ago. The car had fewer than 2,000 miles on it, which told me how little driving she actually did. I politely declined the offer and chose to drive the beat-up old truck parked outside of my childhood home instead. It was my grandfather's truck, then my father's, then Freddie's first car, then Celia's first car, and for a short time, mine. The truck had seen better days, but as long as it took me from point A to point B, I'd be fine. Thankfully, after two questionable grunts and a love tap on the dash, the truck roared to life. I let out a relieved breath as I backed out, chancing a glance in the direction of the shirtless stranger. That was all he was to me anymore. A stranger. Our eyes collided, and I felt my heart stall as if to say, "A stranger? You sure about that?" I answered myself by lifting my chin and turning to focus on the road ahead. In a few short weeks, I'd be out of here for good and wouldn't have to be subjected to his stupid little head games that made me wonder whether or not he was still interested in me. I'd be too busy with my apprenticeship in New York City or Paris. My pulse thrummed with possibilities. The apprenticeship, whichever one I took, was a dream, something I'd been working for my entire life. Something that was afforded to me because my parents made it possible for me to go to that fancy Ivy League, and because I'd worked my ass off once I'd gotten my foot in the door. Soon, I'd be able to show them they hadn't thrown away their money, that they hadn't... My thoughts were cut off by a strange tut-tut-tut noise. Oh, shit. I watched the speedometer, the needle dropping more with each tut, and gripped my steering wheel a little tighter as I took my foot off the accelerator. Letting the truck coast a little on its own, I tried not to focus on the pit of dread curling with a sick heat in my stomach. Most of the dirt roads, aside from the ones behind our houses, were gone. This had always been my favorite and fastest route to the factories. With views of the water behind the tall trees and very few commuters to break behind. The land had been purchased by an investor over a decade ago and never developed. It had stayed desolate, save for the neighborhood kids who used it to ride dirt bikes on. I looked to my left, where the backs of the houses were. I hadn't even gotten a mile away from my house, which meant I could walk back and call my friend Samson, who happened to be the nicer of the two Hawthorne boys. Even if I walked in the other direction and reached the main road, it wasn't as if I couldn't wave someone down and ask them to take me to my destination. I reached for my phone just as the truck gave one last tut and rocked to a complete stop. I let out a grave sigh, looked at the completely empty service bar on my phone, and leaned my forehead against the top of the steering wheel. This was the last shipment of fabric. It wasn't as if Hawthorne Industries needed it, but when Samson and I found it while he helped me clean out the garage, I told him I'd clean them up for him and deliver them. Having these in their possession wasn't a necessity on their end as much as it was on mine. I wanted to give it to them because it was another door closed, another part of what had become a cleansing ritual complete. I couldn't even remember why I'd signed up for the task instead of having Samson pick them up himself. Probably because you're always trying to bite off more than you can chew. Probably because you're trying to overcompensate for the fancy school and the fancy degree. Probably because you truly are afraid to say goodbye to all of this and start a real adult life. I groaned loudly. Fuck my thoughts. Taking one last breath, I lifted my head and stepped out of the truck, walked to the front and popped the hood. A cloud of smoke assaulted me, forcing me to retreat a step as I choked on my own exhale and waved the fumes away from my face. Need help? I jumped at the sound of the voice. Not the voice. His voice. Hard and gravelly, and still the sexiest voice I'd ever heard. I clenched my fists, my nails digging into my flesh as I braced myself to turn around. Don't snap. He's being nice, Tessa. Don't snap at him. But the moment I turned around and my eyes met his, I snapped anyway. No, I don't need help, especially not from you. If he was upset, he didn't let it show. He sauntered over, ignoring me, and peeked under the hood of the truck. I crossed my arms and looked away so he wouldn't think I was checking out those muscular arms of his, or that long, toned back that drove me wild. I was a back girl. Your engine is toast. I know that, I gritted my teeth. You think I don't know that?
You want a ride?
He stood to his full 6'3" stature and turned to me. I lifted my chin and glanced away.
When pigs fly,
I wanted to say, but it sounded as childish as I felt around him, so I merely shook my head in response. I'd call Sam and tell him what happened. He'd gladly pick them up to appease me. Why are you delivering that anyway?
I was cleaning out the garage and found it.
I'm sure no one will mind if you keep it.
I would. I narrowed my eyes at him. I don't want to touch even a portion of what's no longer rightfully mine.
Okay.
He drew out the word with a slight frown.
Let me help you out, then.
I don't want or need your help.
I waited for him to walk away, but he merely shook his head, glancing away to hide whatever emotion he felt, if he felt any at all.
Stupid, emotionless man. I'll figure it out.
You're on a road that's only used by kids on dirt bikes, and it isn't even 10 in the morning. There will be no dirt bikers until at least 5. What are you going to do? Stand here until someone who isn't me comes along?
That would be ideal.
He muttered something under his breath and ran a hand through his hair. You're being unreasonable.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize I was. Hold on. Let me change my facade into something better suited for you. What would you like? Happy-go-lucky, Tessa? Smiling, but doesn't mean it, Tessa? Oh, I know. Maybe the fall-all-over-you-brainless, Tessa.
His lips didn't move, but amusement lit in his eyes. I waited for him to say something cutting. Waited for him to call me a bitch or tell me to go fuck off and jog his ass out of my sight. But he just stood there, watching me as if I were some kind of artwork in a museum that he couldn't figure out. I just want regular, always has a comeback for everything, Tessa, to let me help her just this once.
I tore my gaze from his and looked back at my truck. Thought about the stupid cleansing goodbye ritual I was trying to accomplish. I should have added him to the back of the truck while I was at it. His mere presence was throwing me off. I looked at Rowan again. Fine. I guess I could use your help just this once.
He grinned and made his way to the bed of the truck. I rushed over to make sure he didn't pick up the fabrics without the protector. The last thing I needed was his sweat all over them. I said this aloud, and he laughed, a deep chuckle I felt all the way down to my toes. You love busting my balls, don't you?
I wasn't aware you still had balls to bust.
He didn't laugh, but I saw the way his lips moved slightly just before he looked away. You only have 4 rolls here. I can carry them, but it'll be easier if I go get my car instead. You know, so I won't mess any of them up with my human sweat, he said. Do you want to come with me?
I can wait here. I watched him walk in the direction of the houses and wondered if his car was at his parents'.
My question was answered by how quickly he came back, his black car roaring as it came into view and stopped beside the beat-up truck.
He got out, transferred the rolls from the bed of my truck to his back seat, and shut the door before wiping sweat off his forehead with the back of his arm.
Is it okay if I go back and get a clean t-shirt? He asked. I clamped my jaw together to make sure my expression remained stoic. The last thing I needed was for him to notice the way my eyes fell over his tight, sweaty t-shirt.
That's fine,
I bit out as I slid into his passenger's seat at the same time as he slid into the driver's.
Though, I don't understand why you didn't grab one while you were there.
And deal with your wrath if I kept you waiting any longer? I value my life, thank you. I tried and failed to bite back a smile. Why are you still driving that beat-up truck anyway? He asked.
What else would I drive?
I don't know. Any other car parked in the garage?
There aren't any.
I folded my arms across my chest. Must be nice to have a full house.
Says the guy staying at his parents' house.
There's no one at my parents' house except for me.
He raised an eyebrow.
My brother is moving from his apartment to a bigger house. So he's been going by there to pick up the last of his things, but that's about it. I've barely seen him.
I frowned. So why are you staying there?
And where were his parents living? I didn't want to ask this, of course, but I was dying to know. I'm waiting for construction on my apartment building to be complete. It should be move-in ready by October.
All sorts of questions popped into my head, but I pushed them aside. They'd go unasked because I didn't want to answer any more of his. Thankfully, he clicked for the iron gates that guarded his house to open and drove in, not pushing for an answer. My eyes stayed glued on those gates as we drove past them. They were like something out of a Richie Rich movie, those gates, black with a gold emblem in the center. I'd seen them countless times, pushed them open in the middle of the night more times than I could count. I tore my eyes away and looked up at the house. I hadn't expected to feel such gripping emotion over a damn gate, but I guess some things never stop piercing your heart, no matter how much time passed.
I'll be right out.
I nodded once and leaned against the seat before he jogged inside. I closed my eyes, trying to figure out how my trip had gone from closing a chapter in my life to being stuck in the middle of my epilogue. When Grandma Joan called me with a guilt trip, telling me to come spend a couple of weeks with her, I'd taken her up on the offer for two reasons. I was the only one left who hadn't packed her room and taken the boxes to the storage unit, and I missed her and this place. I missed the days I used to come here and feel like I was home. I missed the slow pace that came with a life here in Ithaca, nestled inside the city, but surrounded by nature and the water. Thinking about those days also brought memories of Rowan. Kissing Rowan, holding hands with him, laughing with him in our canoes. But with the positive came the negative. He and I were never meant to be more than friends. And even friends was questionable. Friends didn't lie or omit important things. My eyes popped open when I heard the front door shut. I watched him take the steps two at a time and stride toward me. He slid into the driver's seat, dropped one of the two bottles of water he'd been carrying into my lap, and shot me a wink. I scowled, clutching the water and facing forward. Just because I'd taken him up on the ride didn't mean we were suddenly going to be chums again. Far from it. I wouldn't fall for those mischievous eyes. I wouldn't fall for the panty-dropping grin, either. I wouldn't fall. Not again.
Chapter 2. Rowan. Stop smiling. She scowled and glanced away. I couldn't help it. I chuckled, though it was cut short by another one of her icy glares. Sliding out of my car, I realized she had no idea how much that little glare of hers turned me on. Most of the time, I wasn't sure which I preferred, the glare or the smile. I'd always dabbled in both when I had her, had being the operative word there. I needed to remember that if this drive was going to go smoothly, and I wanted any shot at seeing her again. Tess is the kind of woman you couldn't jump to conclusions with. Years of platonic friendship taught me that. We'd remain friendly enough after we ended things, especially before she left for college. I'd left a full year ahead of her and had come back for visits. We didn't always catch up. Sometimes she'd be away with her family or friends while I was in town, and I wouldn't see her. I hated those vacations. Started coming home less and less because of them. Home and Tessa were a package deal for me, and on the occasions that she was absent, home seemed dull and uninviting. We called each other on birthdays, texted during holidays, then, out of the blue, all of it stopped. I would have said it was just the way of life, people grow apart, but it wasn't a coincidence that she started pretending we were complete strangers after my parents bought her family's fabric company. The handful of times I'd seen her after, she'd ignored me when I looked at her. If I walked into the same room, she'd pretend I wasn't there. When I'd managed to get her to talk to me, she hadn't even looked me in the eyes. The only time she actually managed to meet my gaze was when she was glaring at me, which was 99% of the time. None of that mattered. She was sitting with her back ramrod straight, her face tilted up slightly as she looked straight ahead. She had always been so beautiful. Beautiful, caring, and hardworking, with a heart of gold and a body that made a man think sinful, dirty thoughts. I swallowed those thoughts and started driving. "When'd you get back in town?" I'd been jogging by her house ever since I overheard my brother talking to her on the phone. I hadn't asked about it. I just pretended I wasn't listening as I followed him to the break room just to catch any information about her that I could. Unfortunately for me, I'd only managed to catch one laugh and one statement from him. And then I started jogging, as if I'd ever made jogging part of my workout in the past. She glanced over briefly. "A couple of weeks ago." "How long will you be here this time?" She gnawed on her bottom lip, looking at the road ahead. "A few weeks?" "Hmm. Leaving for good this time?" I was only half joking. It was the one thing I'd clearly overheard my brother say on the phone. "Actually, yes. For good, this time." I smiled. Tessa was one of those girls who wanted to get out of her town in a blink, but would come back and visit so often you'd never know she'd been gone at all. She loved her parents and siblings too much to just ghost. "Do you still want to design dresses?" "Maybe," she shrugged. "Where will you go?" I asked. "Did you get a job offer?" Her face whipped in my direction. She had this wild look in those almond-shaped eyes of hers, as if she was unsure of what to do with everything I was asking. My chest squeezed as I waited. "Why are you driving so slow? We should be there by now." She was right. I was driving slower than I'd ever driven before, trying to savor the little time I had with her in my presence. "You didn't answer my questions." "Yeah, on purpose." Her words cut, but I didn't let it show. I don't bleed. It was something Dad drilled into us from a young age. Yes, people were all the same. We were all born and we would all die. The only thing really setting us apart was the way we chose to spend the short time we were alive. The difference between the Hawthorns and everyone else was that in times of trouble, we were to remain stoic. It was what was expected of us, after all. I hadn't yet mastered my dad's uncaring characteristics or the way Mom upturned her nose to everything she didn't approve of. Not sure I ever would. As far as I knew, neither had my brother. I cleared my throat and turned my attention to Tessa. "Kind, sweet, drop-dead gorgeous and doesn't know it, Tessa. I just want to know how you're doing." "I'm doing well. I'll be better once I don't have to see you running down my block every morning." A smile crept onto my lips. "I didn't think you'd noticed. You never look." "You don't need one more woman looking at you." "You're right. I only need one woman looking at me." "Oh." She stayed quiet for a beat, and I thought I finally had her, but then she lifted her fiery gaze to mine and added, "Did Cameron finally move here?" Fucking Cameron. The jab bothered me more than it should have. Tessa had every right to throw that in my face, and with the rumblings that were happening in regard to Hawthorne Industries, I wouldn't be surprised if Cameron took her claws out of the hedge fund manager she'd been fucking in New York and came back around to try to stake her claim on my last name again. It was what I would do if I were her. That was the thing about Cameron. Underneath everything, I saw pieces of myself in her loneliness. She wasn't like Tessa. Not the Tessa I knew, anyway. I didn't feel like I knew this version of her. This mean, snappy woman who looked at me as if I were mud beneath her feet. Though, I have to admit, I did like the idea that she was a little jealous. Maybe I had a chance to write this after all. She's leaving soon. The thought crashed through me like a 10-foot wave. It was the same wave that crashed through me when I was set to leave for college and had broken things off with her because I didn't want her to think this had any chance of turning into a long-distance relationship. Later, I'd changed my mind about it, and she'd waved the idea away. That was when the possibility that she'd never actually be mine hit me. And I selfishly started to hate myself for breaking things off to begin with. After pulling into the parking lot much sooner than I would have liked, I threw the car into park and went to climb out, but she put her hand on my arm. It's okay. You don't have to help. I willed my heart not to pound the way it was. I do not bleed. Damn it. Sam's waiting for me. He'll help me get the stuff inside and take me home when I'm done. I'm sure you're dying to shower. Her cheeks flamed when she said that, and she looked away to open the door. I would have reveled in it, but my jaw clenched at the mention of my brother's name. Before I had time to say anything smart, he was jogging outside, smiling at her as if she were the only person in the universe. My hands gripped the steering wheel. My brother was a good guy, the kind of guy you want your daughter taking home. Hardworking and caring. I consider myself a good guy, but I was selfish where he wasn't. I was driven, where he was just okay with the position he'd been working in for years. He didn't even take Dad up on the offer of moving up in the company. I watched as Tessa got out of the car and wrapped her arms around him in a hug. Was it a friendly hug? Was it more than that? In spite of everything I'd once shared with my brother in that moment, I hated him. I knew I had no claim on her, but I hated Samson for having any part of her. Even when we were all just friends, they had understood each other on a level I hadn't quite been able to reach. It still bothered me. I would have killed to have just one tiny sliver of her affection still. Tessa did that to people. She was a light in this dark, ugly world, and with the power to turn your bad days around with a simple smile. I let that slip away. I agreed with that. I just didn't know why. I wanted to curse the day my parents bought her family's factory, but my self-importance wouldn't even let me do that. Regardless of that, I missed her. Hey, Ro, you coming inside? Sam asked as he dipped into my back seat and gathered the fabrics. I'll be back in an hour. Tessa opened the passenger door again and grabbed a bag. Thanks for the ride, she said in a low, sweet voice I hadn't heard directed at me in ages. My eyes snapped to hers. I can go by and figure out what to do with the truck, I offered. No need. I'll have a tow truck go by there or have Sam go get it for me. Sam. Fucking Sam. My own brother. You getting cozy with my brother now? She shrugged, as if to say they were together but not serious, and then glanced away. I didn't like the way the burn of that shrug curled inside me, so I took a deep breath and let it out. I did not bleed. I shouldn't have even cared who she was with. Surely she'd probably dated other guys in the last 5 years, but still, something about seeing it made it different. Maybe it was because it was my brother, and dating each other's exes was supposed to be off the table. Well, thanks again. She pushed back and closed the door. I lowered the window. Tessa! Maybe we can have dinner sometime. She pursed her lips. My heart raced. At least she was thinking about it. I felt a slow smile creep on my face and watched as she flushed. I'm not sure your girlfriend would appreciate that. Well, it's a good thing I'm single, then. She looked at me for a moment longer, chewed her bottom lip as she mulled over whatever it was she wanted to say. I'll think about it. I let out a breath and smiled. Thinking about it was better than flat-out no.
Chapter 3. Tessa.
Does he think we're together? Sam asked as he drove me home.
Who?
He shot me an impatient look. I bit my lip and looked out the window to keep from answering. Maybe if he truly thought I didn't know whom he was talking about, he'd leave me alone. It was highly unlikely, but a girl could hope. Sam rarely let questions go unanswered, and one look at my face would tell him I was full of it.
My brother, he said. He looked at me like he wanted to kill me.
Who cares? I shrugged. He's my brother.
Doesn't he always look at you like that? I mean, you said yourself that you've barely spoken a word since he left for college.
I raised an eyebrow. I didn't know the details,
but I assumed they had a falling out. One of those absolutely absurd reasons that made no sense, but made people lose touch completely. I guess I could have understood it if they weren't the only sibling the other had.
I've been trying to fix things between us. Besides, even if I could dodge him at family functions, I'm going to have to put up with him at Hawthorne Fabrics for the rest of my life.
It isn't like he's the boss there.
Yet.
Yet. The word angrily made its way around my gut and festered. Rowan would fit into his father's shoes once he took over Hawthorne for good. He would also hate it if he knew I was comparing him to his father. Not that it was an outlandish comparison when I considered the way he'd turned out. I turned my attention back to Sam.
You never know. You may end up being the boss instead.
I don't want to be the boss, he said. I'm perfectly content with my brother having that role. He's business savvy. I'm not. He has the same drive that Dad has. I don't. I like the creative work, not the number crunching. I hate dealing with people. He loves it.
I like that about you.
I know. He smiled. So, does he think we're together?
I may have let him believe we might be together.
I closed my eyes and cringed as I said the words. Sam chuckled.
Why? He wanted to up the ante in our sibling rivalry?
I just didn't like the way he asked me if we were together, as if he deserves to be privy to any of that information. So I let him believe we were.
He stayed silent for a long moment before speaking. You know, I've always thought mind games were dumb, especially between two people who are clearly longing for each other.
I don't long for him, I scoffed. He's moved on. I've moved on. End of story.
He scoffed back. You've moved on? With who? Me? Under false pretenses?
I dated guys in college, I said. Besides, I don't need a man in order to say I've moved on. I've moved on with my life. Period.
Yet, you involve me in the mix because you know he'd have a problem with it. You knew he was jealous of our friendship even when you and he were together.
I rolled my eyes.
Well, that's bullshit because we were just friends. Besides, he has a girlfriend. I don't know why he cares about who I'm with.
You know damn well Cameron isn't his girlfriend.
Yet, we can't seem to place her in an alternative category.
This isn't Jeopardy, Tess, he said with an exhale. Maybe it's force of habit. Or maybe he isn't over you.
Let's go with the brother thing, or even the force of habit. He and I weren't even together. Not really, anyway.
You were friends for a long time, though, he said.
Yeah, and we should have stayed friends.
Probably. Still, I find it hard to believe that two people as close as you two were can't salvage at least the friendship you had. It's sad, don't you think?
It is, I admitted. It was the reason I regretted ever taking my relationship with Rowan to the next level. Even after we broke up, I didn't have it in me to hate him. I loved him too much for that. It hadn't been until the Hawthorne takeover happened that I started to hate him. He had known it was going to happen and hadn't thought to tell me. His father consulted everything with him. Everything. So there was no chance that he didn't know about it, and he just didn't tell me anything. Not that my parents had said a word to me about it until it was done, but that was different. In their eyes, I'd forever be the baby of the family. They didn't need my approval to sell the company. Rowan used to call me for mindless things, but when something that important, that life-changing, happened, I didn't get so much as a text. What was worse, when I sent him one, he left it unopened and unanswered.
The kicker was that my family's fabrics company wasn't the only one his parents bought. There had been four within a 100-mile radius. Surely they didn't need one more. They didn't need ours.
If Rowan had told me, I would have come home and prevented it from happening.
I could have convinced my dad not to sell. I would have done anything to keep Monty Industries out of it, including dropping out of the fancy Ivy League school I was in and opting for a smaller college. It's not like Monty Industries was anywhere near as big as Hawthorne Industries, but the upholstery we made was beautiful and sought out by all the local furniture companies. When I was little, I'd go to work with my parents and marvel that all of those people worked for us, making things my father had designed. Now they all worked for the Hawthorns.
You can't blame him for something he didn't have a say in, Sam said. Trust me, I didn't even know about it.
I can assure you he did, and I only blame him for not confiding in me. That sale ruined my family.
He shot me a sympathetic look. I'm sorry.
It isn't your fault.
If you don't blame me, you shouldn't blame him either.
Why are you so hell-bent on defending him today?
He pulled into my driveway and then turned to face me. Look, I have a lot of issues with my brother, but I can't fault him for what happened to your family, and you shouldn't either. Maybe if you try being friends with him again, you would be able to see that.
I shook my head. Some things are better left alone.
And some things are worth chasing. Friendship is one of them.
Not with people you feel this strongly about.
He stared at me for a moment, looking like he wanted to say something more, but he just shook his head and looked out the windshield. I sighed and reached for my door handle.
Thanks for the ride.
I'll drive by the area where you said the truck died and call a tow truck to come get it.
I can do that.
Today was the last day of you bringing fabrics for me to lug in. Consider it a parting gift.
I smiled. Thanks, Sam. You really are the better of the Hawthorne boys.
Feel free to print that in the newspaper.
He winked as he drove off, and I laughed as I headed inside.
Chapter 4. Rowan. Tessa had crawled into my head and made a little nest there long ago. In college, during those early morning bus rides with my teammates, I'd shut my eyes and pretend I was back in her truck. That led me to thinking about her more than I should have. Normally, I could swat it away and ignore its existence, but this time, she seemed to be the only thing I could think about. Maybe it was because today was the first time in forever that I'd actually gotten to talk to her, but the only thing I seemed to be able to think about was the next time I could see her. If she didn't accept my dinner invitation, I wasn't even sure how I could see her again, short of me showing up at her house, but if that's what it took, I'd do it. That was the thing about Tessa. Once I caught a whiff of her, I seemed to crave her beyond comprehension. To this day, I couldn't explain it. I sighed as I walked into the little restaurant I was set to have lunch with my mother in, which was not something I was looking forward to. Ever since my parents announced their split to us back in the spring, it had felt as if the world had turned upside down, and I was left clinging on to anything that could withstand the storm brewing. Sam didn't know how good he had it, sitting back on the sidelines and getting to follow his creative passions. The whole giving no fucks vibe definitely had him at an even steeper advantage. I spotted her dark brown hair almost immediately. Mom always had the same hairstyle, a sophisticated bun that kept the hair from her face. I cursed when I noticed the blonde sitting beside her, and then wished I'd been paying closer attention. Had I noticed sooner, I would have turned around and walked right out. I took a breath and kept my anger in check. Cameron was always weaseling her way into my life. It wasn't enough that our parents were lifelong friends and we'd spent the majority of our childhoods and teen years in the same social circle. Nope. She had heard the rumors of my parents' divorce and how I was next in line to head the company, pulled her claws out of the Wall Street guy she was fucking in New York, and showed up here. It wasn't by chance. Nothing she did was. I knew it as surely as I knew my mother was happy about it. Cameron smiled brighter when I came forward. You look dashing today. I ignored her compliment and kissed my mother on both cheeks before leaning in to do the same to her. Before I could pull away, she caught my jaw and gave me a peck on the lips. Mom raised her eyebrows as if to say, "Something you want to tell me?" I shook my head and fought not to roll my eyes. She always got that look when Cameron was around. Her barely masked approval was enough to make me uncomfortable. I glared at my mother, who stifled a smile behind her mimosa. Truth be told, Cameron and my mom weren't that different. I glanced at Cameron. "What are you doing here?" "Oh, I had a long layover on my way to San Fran and decided to make a day of it. I tried calling you, but it was going straight to voicemail. I figured you didn't have any reception out here in the country." I rolled my eyes. We were hardly in the country. "Anyway, I had lunch with a few friends and ran into your mom on my way out. Of course, I had to sit and keep her company while she waited for you. Well, I'm here now." Her smile dropped. "I guess I'll leave you to discuss your private matters." She gathered a purse slowly, probably waiting to see if we were going to invite her to stay. Neither of us said a word as she stood and plastered another fake smile on her face. "Well, it was great chatting with you, Mildred. I have a flight to catch." "Always a pleasure, Cameron. Have a safe flight. Say hello to your mother." "Of course. I'm sure she'll want to get together with you when you're in Paris next month. She's been missing everyone since moving away last year. I'll set something up. Maybe we can all grab dinner together." She smiled at me as she said it. I tore my gaze from her green eyes and looked at Mom. "Sure, dear." When she walked away, I felt the lead weight drop off of my shoulders. "She's dying for you to give her a chance." "A chance to do what exactly? She manhandled me every opportunity she gets. And you let her?" "It's harmless." I shrugged. Sure, she'd caused trouble in the past, but that was then. I wasn't tied down to anybody now, and the moment it came to that, I knew how to deal with her. "Sweetheart." Mom placed her hand over mine, beckoning me to meet her gaze. I did. "Women are never harmless. The faster you learn that, the better off you'll be." I swallowed a mouthful of the mimosa the waiter just served me and tried to wash away the uneasiness her words brought. Mom had ordered a pitcher. From the looks of it, she was either halfway to an afternoon nap or ready to party. I've never given her reason to believe I'd ever be interested in getting serious. I picked up the menu even though I knew I'd order my go-to steak and potatoes. "Only serious enough to spend the night in her bed?" Mom raised an eyebrow. "I never spend the night in anyone's bed." It was the truth. Cameron and I'd hooked up in high school and then again once in college, but it never went beyond that. Mom rolled her eyes and took a long sip of her mimosa. "That's what your dad said about his mistress, and look how that turned out. I ordered your usual for you, by the way." I put the menu down and met her pained blue eyes. "You can't compare Dad's affair to this." "You're right. I'm sorry." She dabbed at her eyes with her napkin. It was so weird to see my mom cry. She'd always shown so little emotion when we were growing up. The news of Dad's long-running affair with his secretary, a woman who had come to our house almost every day, had gone on family trips with us growing up, and had stopped by on holidays, seemed to rip my mom open. Suddenly she was crying and talking about feelings and asking about ours. I felt awful for her, but the selfish side of me liked this more emotionally available version of her. I just wish it'd come sooner, before her aloofness and Dad's absence and their combined loveless marriage scarred me irrevocably. "Your brother still isn't answering my phone calls," she said. "Is he okay?" My jaw clenched as I thought about Tessa with Sam. "Why do you have that look on your face?" Her question made me blink out of my red haze. "Sam's dating Tessa now. Maybe you should ask her how he's doing." "Oh." Mom raised her eyebrows slightly. "They're good together." I shot her a glare. She shrugged. "She isn't good for you, Rowan. She never was. She's too young and naive. You don't need a girl like that in your life." "She's a woman now, Mom." "Just as well. Anyhow, I was hoping to speak to both of you together before my trip, she said. Your father and I are keeping this divorce private until everything is finalized with the company, but I wanted to fill you in on the basics. We're talking about splitting Hawthorne Fabrics down the middle. My eyes widened. What? What is there to split? Won't that cause friction with the accounts we currently have? It'll be a quiet split, she said, shooting me an irritated look. Mom hated interruptions. It'll be divided between the States and Europe accounts. What about South America? Asia? That earned me another look. I'm getting to that, Rowan. I swallowed and sat back. Waited. My knees started to bounce underneath the table. Asia and South America will also be split between both companies. We're bidding for those. Bidding? You're going to get into a bidding war? Unbelievable. She blinked prettily, the way she often did in front of my father in order to get her way. I ignored it. Do we have a say in this? No. Your father and I will discuss it and get back to you. I just want you to understand what's happening. I pushed out a deep breath, shook my head, and dug into the steak and potatoes the waiter placed in front of me. A part of me hoped she'd say that my brother and I would have to hash it out, leave the decision to us. Maybe if we were forced to work together, we could salvage the friendship we once had, the one where we put each other over everything and everyone. When Mom spoke again, it was about family, about marriage and kids, and about building something of my own. I'd heard the story a million times, but listening to it right then made a sick feeling twist in my stomach. My grandparents had opened the textiles company in the basement of their two-bedroom townhouse. The moment my parents were married, they became a project to my grandparents, a way to expand the brand. Eventually, they let Dad run the company, and while he'd made good business decisions, he decided to buy out Monty Industries, something I would have done given the chance. If Dessa's father had been business-minded and hadn't thought of Monty as more of a passion project, they'd be the ones owning us and not the other way around. They'd had the factories and the labor workers, the room to grow. They just didn't act on it. Mr. Monty was always too focused on the creative aspect of the company, not the business side of things. The only place I could see that Dad went wrong was not buying out the company for my grandparents, whether it be because the growth wasn't as fast as he'd originally intended, or he didn't want to do that to his old man, I'd never know. It would be one of the first things I would do, if I ever had the chance, though. Sam didn't care about our inheritance, or his role in the company. Whereas I'd been primed for this from age 7 when Dad started taking me to work with him every summer. Sam would go sometimes, but he wasn't required to the way I was. When he did go, it was for an allowance. We weren't the spoiled rich guys outsiders may have thought we were. We'd been raised to work for our money. We had allowances growing up, had worked for our first cars, and had paid for our own car insurance. Even though we lived in a nice house and went to top-notch schools, we hadn't been spoiled the way a lot of our friends had been. Nowadays, I was grateful for that. I was also grateful for the work ethic my father had instilled in me. It was probably the one thing I could say I learned from him. I know your hearts aren't in this. Samson's heart isn't in it, but mine is. Otherwise, why would I even entertain this conversation? Contracts are important to abide by, she said. Marriage being one of them. I blinked. I knew where marriage fit into Hawthorne. I just hadn't put much thought into it in regard to myself and the company. As far as I was concerned, marriage was a business transaction. On occasion when Tessa's limbs were wrapped around mine, I'd had fleeting thoughts about marriage, but I ended our relationship before any of that could be a serious notion. Even if I genuinely believed in the sanctity of those vows, my parents' divorce would have changed that. Love was an illusion. An idea that society tried to sell to you. I believed in respect and honesty, but love? Love had never been on my radar. Chapter 5. Rowan. Past. Dad always woke me up at 7 o'clock on Saturday mornings. It was the day we went around and visited our customers. Samson came along sometimes, but not usually. He wasn't expected to. He had baseball games on Saturdays that Grandpa Pete took him to, games that Dad made me stop playing because he needed me to be his sidekick. I'd called myself a sidekick to help me get through the boring days, but really, I was more like an accessory. Even my 13-year-old self knew that. By the time we pulled into Monte Industries, it was 10 in the morning. We'd already gone to 3 other manufacturing companies before this stop. All 3 had been the same, husband talking shop with Dad while I sat there silently pretending to pay attention, and the wife offered me cookies and milk and finally a juice box. By the time we pulled up at Monte Industries, I'd had 3 juice boxes and thought if I saw one more cookie, I'd puke. I wasn't much of a sweets kid. Mr. Monte smiled as he said hi to Dad, and smiled wider when he saw me in tow. "Little working man," he'd said. "I need to put Freddy to work on Saturday mornings." "You gotta start him young," Dad said with a gleam in his eyes that made me warm inside. Maybe he was proud of me after all. I mean, I did come along while all the other kids my age were obviously sleeping or doing fun things. "I heard you were going to start rowing for the school team soon," Mr. Monte said. "Will you still have time to come by on Saturdays?" "He'll have to make up his work whenever he's free," Dad answered, patting my head. "He's next in line to take over the company, so he needs to learn the ropes." We walked inside and sat in Mr. Monte's upstairs office, which overlooked the employees downstairs. After 10 minutes of listening to them talk about my mom and Mrs. Monte and how important family was in all of this, I tuned them out and looked out at the window. Everybody was either sewing, stapling, or rolling fabric rolls in plastic to keep it safe. The door opened suddenly, and a few people stopped to wave at Tessa, who walked in wearing her ballet outfit, pink tights and a pink leotard. She wore Converse sneakers on her feet, but was holding a pink bag that I knew held her point shoes. I looked over my shoulder. "May I use the restroom?" "Of course," Mr. Monte said. Dad shot me a warning look that made me shiver, but I walked out of the office nonetheless. Dad hated when I interrupted conversations or asked for anything, including the restroom. I ran downstairs and scanned the room for Tessa. I found her sitting in front of the coffee machine in the break room. Her head snapped up when I walked into the room. My heart beat a little faster. "Working again?" she asked. "Yeah." I exhaled and sat in the chair across from her. "So boring." "Why doesn't Sam do it?" "Because he's not expected to. He's the baby of the family, not the firstborn." "Hmm." She gave me a sad but understanding smile, probably because she herself was the baby of the family. "At least you know what you're going to be when you grow up." "Don't you?" I waved a hand around. "Yeah, well, I mean, I hope. I'm not the firstborn." Her eyes twinkled when she said that. She was the prettiest girl, especially when she smiled like that. "What would you be when you grow up if you could be anything?" I shrugged. "The president of Hawthorne Industries." "That's it?" She laughed. "That's what you're going to do anyway. I mean, if you didn't have to do that." "Same answer." Her eyes searched mine for a long moment as if she were waiting for me to change my mind. Tessa's parents encouraged growth and being whatever you wanted to be. I'd been waking up early on Saturday since I was 5 years old. Hawthorne Industries was the only thing I knew and the only thing I was expected to do with my life. I fully accepted it. Tessa kept talking about her day. She was dropped off here after ballet because she wanted her dad to take her to the mall to buy presents for her brother and sister. After listening to her for a while, I said goodbye, went back upstairs, knowing that if I was gone too long, there'd be hell to pay later. In the car, Dad reprimanded me for taking too long in the bathroom. "It's not responsible. You need to learn the difference between work and fun." "I do know the difference. That's why I'm not hanging out with my friends and I'm here instead." That earned me a hard look and a pop on the mouth. "You don't bleed." he said. Remember that. You're not like those other kids. You have things to do with your time and your life. I held my hand to my lips. He said I couldn't plead, but the thick liquid in my mouth said otherwise. I held back the hot, frustrated tears that threatened to spill out of my eyes, knowing that would only earn me more than just a pop in the mouth. Crying was a sign of weakness. I'd learned that from watching Mom trying to buy his affection through tears. The only thing it did was ensue a screaming fit from him that included name-calling and belittling. Just the other night during dinner, Sam brought up a bad grade, and Dad yelled and told him he was stupid and stupidity didn't belong in this family. I'd held my brother's hand under the table just to let him know I was with him, no matter what. But I didn't stand up for him. That was 3 nights ago, and I was still kicking myself for not standing up to my father. He made it difficult, though. He was quick to remind us how insignificant we were, and I didn't want that reminder. Not when I felt it every night, when I was in my room trying to find sleep and my parents screamed about what a mistake we were.
Chapter 6. Tessa. I closed my eyes and inhaled the scent of pine that surrounded me. It may have reminded the rest of the world of Christmas, but for me, it was the smell of home. I opened my eyes and let out a deep, cleansing breath before continuing toward the red canoe. I pushed it away from the dock and climbed in just as the tip glided into the water, picking up the paddle and making my way to my favorite relaxing spot. I went slowly, enjoying the way the paddle felt as it sliced through the still water. When I finally reached the little bank in the middle of the lake, I pulled the paddle in, made sure it was secure, and laid back to let my muscles relax. I used to go much further than this without complaints from my shoulders, which told me I was definitely not in shape like I used to be. It didn't help that I paddled by myself. Usually Freddie or Celia helped. Then again, usually canoes and jet skis filled the lake, and out farther, sailboats dotted against the skyline. I guess that was what happened when everyone in the neighborhood grew up together. They got older and started their lives and left at the same time. I kept my eyes closed and tried to force my brain to think about something else, something positive, but it was no use. Being back only brought on old memories. Not that they were all bad. I'd had a pretty damn good home life before Dad decided to sell to Hawthorne. Still, I had great friends, most of who had graduated college and gone on to grad school or were getting married. Even my memories of Rowan made me smile most days. I thought about what Sam said to me yesterday. Maybe I could be friends with him again. Who knows? My canoe rocked lightly and my eyes popped open. I gripped both sides and sat up quickly, twisting to see who was out here. It could be the people in charge of cleaning up the water, though judging from how clean it was, I'd bet money they had already done it. I brought my hand up to shield the sun from my face and squinted in the direction of a bright blue canoe. My heart sped up. From where I sat, I couldn't tell if it was Sam or Rowan, but I would know that canoe anywhere. Unlike mine, theirs was a professional vessel. A single skull, Rowan had once told me. That was the official term for it. The kind they used in the Olympics. The kind that took me more than a handful of tries to get a handle on, but Rowan maneuvered as if it were his own skin. He called it Miles. Miles was blue and shiny, and made you not want to look away from it once it rode past you, much like its owner. Rowan had been on the crew team in high school and college. I'd woken up more than enough times at 4 a.m. and accompanied him to tournaments. Heck, even after we'd gone our separate ways, I'd heard that he'd gotten Columbia more than a few trophies as captain. I wasn't surprised one bit. As he got closer, I settled into a more comfortable position and willed my heart to stop acting like a rabbit being chased. The single skull kissed the side of my nameless